The question was asked, when we look at the Haggadah in Talmud, how much of it are we obligated to accept or believe? So let's begin with what Nachmanides writes in his redaction of his debate with the apostate, the Jew that became an apostate and was fighting for the Christian side. Nachmanides says that we are obligated to accept every Haggadah that's in Talmud. So that's just a starting point. That's Nachmanides, who is coming to argue that other Haggadot are less obligatory, which is something to be discussed in its own right. Did Nachmanides mean what he said? And what does that mean? But even he begins with the understanding that what it says in Talmud has to be accepted. Before I address your question, I think it's important to be careful. When I would read the Talmud in Tractate Shabbos that describes how Mordechai developed like a woman when Esther couldn't nurse, so for years I was wondering what the deeper meaning to that was. And then a year or two ago, someone showed me an article which says that it's very common in places where there's famine that men's hormones shift, and men will develop like women, and they'll be able to nurse babies. Boggled my mind. I didn't believe it initially until I was able to verify it in a journal of medicine. So suddenly the Talmud seemed very believable. Now, what the Talmud had told me earlier, and I kept wondering what's going on here, initially didn't make sense to me. For years, I was wondering if the Talmud's insistence that we do mitzitza, that after circumcision, we suck out blood around the organ, whether that the Talmud was so focused on getting the blood out, or the Talmud was aware of the medicinal properties of one saliva. I was wondering, and I never found a source for it. And a year or two ago, someone showed me that in Maimonides' medical writings, he writes about the saliva, the impact the saliva has in helping things heal. We have to be careful when we approach the Talmud. Very often, Western civilization, and especially modern science, tends to view things skeptically when modern science hasn't arrived at that conclusion yet. For years, I remember our family doctor told us, if you think you're allergic to milk, it's all in your mind. But I knew I was allergic to milk. I knew that when when I drank milk, I would cough, I would have a runny nose. I saw it. The days I drank milk, I had a runny nose. The days I didn't, I didn't, as a kid. And the family doctor said, there's no medical research backing it, but I saw it on my own body. Doctors used to scorn the medicinal benefits of garlic. There are many things that modern medicine doesn't take seriously, and very often modern Western thought, which uses that arrogant term modern, as though it's a we know what we're talking about. That doesn't always mean we do. So before we speak about the fact that there are things in Talmud that should not be taken literally, I just want to caution that we shouldn't be quick to assume that what the Talmud said is less than literal. It's very easy to take that route. Nonetheless, we do have we have a letter by Maimonides' son in which he writes that in areas of science, we don't have to go blindly with the Talmud, that there can be areas that the Talmud was not addressing what we think it was addressing, or as the Maharal writes in Be'er Agula, when the Talmud discusses why there's a rainbow. So the Talmud knew that the refraction of light causes a rainbow. The Talmud discusses why there's an eclipse. The Talmud knew you could forecast eclipse. That was a well-known fact of science back then already. Maimonides discusses it as something that was known for generations. So the Maharal says that when the Talmud gives us reasons for scientific things, the Talmud is discussing why did Hashem create that in nature. It's not saying that the reason an eclipse will happen as a result of this behavior. It's saying when you see an eclipse, you should realize God created within nature an eclipse to teach you a certain concept. But it's not that every time you see an eclipse, it's a result of a certain behavior. So the Maharal says every time our sages discuss things in science, what they're really telling you is why did Hashem create that in nature to begin with. They're not discussing why it happened in this instance. They're discussing a general approach. The Meiri writes that we can take Maimonides' rules of interpreting Agadot and apply them more broadly. That the sages taught concepts, and they weren't always talking literally. But again, before we take these rules and apply them, we have to be a little careful, because Maimonides went so far as to say that even the sorcery and magic that's discussed in Talmud is not to be taken literally. And the other commentaries all disagreed with him. They said there's a discussion here of forces that Maimonides just didn't understand, and his Western philosophy misled him, as the Gra writes in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch. So sometimes our Western approach can actually blind us. We're so used to looking at the world as two-dimensional. Things have to fit into our system that sometimes that creates blind spots where things we don't understand must have another interpretation if they're real, because they cannot be literal. And I wouldn't be so quick to say that. So in a nutshell, number one, Nachmanides writes that the Agadot of Talmud do have greater weight in that where we are obligated to accept them. Maimonides and the Meiri writes that there are deeper meanings to things that are discussed about science. The Maharal writes that when our sages give us reasons for things in nature, they are not discussing the factual scientific reason, but rather a philosophical reason as to why God created that within nature. And as a conclusion, we do have to think before we say that wasn't literal. We shouldn't be so quick to say that.